we interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
Happy Tuesday to you. And it is a Tuesday, July 9th edition of Bumper to Bumper Sports, teeing off on 103.7 The Game. Ben Love alongside the famous Clint D. And for the next 2 hours, we got you, bringing you home from inside the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. A lot of baseball chatter today. And oh yeah, it's Tuesday, so you know Shea Dixon coming up in the 5 o'clock hour. More on that soon. But we've got to start with the Home Run Derby. I'm not just going there for filler. I'm not just going there because it happened last night, and, well, we really didn't have anything terribly meaningful in the NBA, right? Free agency has just about wound down, right? That wick has gotten to the end, has exploded. Russell Westbrook accepting. Major League Baseball didn't have any live action in terms of games, head-to-head combat. They didn't have the All-Star game. Yeah, that's later tonight. Nothing really monumental in the NFL. But in all seriousness, that might just have been the best home run derby ever. Did it have Junior Griffey's sweet southpaw swing? No. Did it have a juiced up Mike Piazza hitting zero home runs, not once but twice? Yeah, I was reminded last night by baseball buddies that are even deeper into the weeds than I am that that was a real thing that happened. Mike Piazza, who once asked to play for the Italian national team in the World Baseball Classic, went goose egg in 2 years consecutive at the Home Run Derby. Yeah, this wasn't any of that. This was baseball's youth movement on a pretty darn big stage, and I would say they performed. If you didn't know who Ronald Acuna Jr. was before last night, first off, shame on you. If you didn't know Vlad Jr., you're really under a rock. But now you definitely know Pete Alonso. That was a lot of fun. So briefly, I'll recap. We've got a little bit of sound, I believe, from the events as well at Progressive Field in Cleveland. And I'll tell you what it meant and just why it was so darn cool. Again, Pete Alonso, your winner. New York Mets first baseman, all of 24 years old, and he officially beat Vlad Guerrero Jr., all of 20 years old, in the final. I'm going to get back to Vladdy Daddy's kid here in a moment, but let's get to Pete Alonso. To the victor go the spoils, to the victor go the words. Here is what New York Mets first baseman Pete Alonso said about winning a pretty darn exciting derby.
I never thought I would get booed during a home run derby, so that was a little different. But I guess I understand going against the hometown guy, and I just wanted to put on the best show I possibly could for the fans here. I mean, the environment was electric, and I don't know. This is awesome. It's unexplainable.
It was awesome, and I'll get back to the reasons, the ages, momentarily. Alonso won. Good on him. But the lasting memory will be Vlad Jr. and Jock Peterson going blow for blow, blast for blast. And some of them were mammoth. In fact, going back to Pete Alonso, the reason the kid even won is because he had a certain number of dingers over, I think it was 440 feet, something of that ilk, and that allowed him more time on the clock. Boy, the formatting has changed dramatically, CD, for the Home Run Derby.
It has, but I feel like it works a lot better than it used to whenever it used to have it be 10 outs and you see a guy, you brought up juiced up Mike Piazza. What about juiced up Mark McGwire, who just kept hitting home run after home run after home run, and like 30 minutes later, he's still out there swinging.
And some of my favorites is when these guys get bad BP tossers and they yes. sit there and they just watch like 3 out of 5 pitches. I don't have time for that. The ghost of Chris Berman's voice doesn't have enough backs for that. So just hit the damn baseball. Well, look, they did last night. And Clint's right. With that monitored clock, things are moving awfully quickly. But Vlad Jr., he's going to be an absolute star in Major League Baseball. Set a record in the first round for dingers in a derby. Then he tied it in the second round. Not to be outdone, Jock Peterson of the L.A. Dodgers tied it himself, forced a one-minute tiebreaker. But that wasn't all. They tied there. All right, do it again. So they did. But that wasn't all. Because they tied there, they had like triple overtime in that bad boy last night. And so Vlad Jr., in an all-time elite BP battle, wards off Jock Peterson. And ultimately, you get Pete Alonso over Vlad Jr. in the finals. Two reasons why that was meaningful and why you should give a hoot. I know, no Astros were involved, no former LSU or Cajuns players. The youth movement that I mentioned. The winner, Alonso, all of 24 years old. Plus, they call him the Polar Bear. Pretty cool nickname. Ronald Acuna Jr. of the Braves, 21 years old. Vlad Jr., 20 years old. It has to become a younger man's game. It has to become a game that younger people relate to. And so maybe, to Clint's point, speeding it up paid dividends. Here's the other reason that you shouldn't ever forget what happened last night. Clint, if you've seen this, then you could just give the digits and, well, my exercise will be a little more in futility. Last night, Vlad Jr. hit 91 home runs, and he didn't win, which is hilarious. He hit 91 taters. Imagine telling one of your best players, we're just going to send you out there and keep going until you hit 91 home runs. He hit 91. That is a home run derby record for taters in totality. The previous record was your guy, don't call me Mike, but Giancarlo Stanton in 2016. Have you seen that number? And I swear, I see you typing in.
I have
don't
not.
You dare Google cheat on me.
I have not.
This is like trivia rules at your local bar, bro. If you don't know it, I want to see hands above the head. I don't want to see any fingers on keyboards.
Yeah.
What was the record from Stanton just 3 years ago?
All right, off the top of my head, because I have not seen the number, to be quite honest with you, I'll go 85.
How about 61?
Oh, wow.
Vlad Jr. beat the record last night by 30 freaking bombs.
A lot of that was helped with the triple overtime.
You found a way to hate on 91 home runs in like a single night's work for Vlad Jr. So he did his pops proud. He did everybody in Hoser country, north of the border, proud. The youth movement was served. That was a lot of fun to watch. And if tonight's All-Star game in Cleveland matches in any way, shape, or form, yeah, we're in for a bit of a treat. All right, quickly, before we actually take you to Cleveland in our next segment to get a scene setter, LSU baseball today made official what was reported about 36 to 40 hours ago. Eddie Smith has joined LSU's baseball staff as volunteer coach and hitting coach for Paul Maneri. 35 years old, Smith. He played for Maneri and then coached for a Maneri disciple. Here's what Paul had to say in a release from LSU. Quote, "We're extremely excited to add Eddie Smith to our staff, and we're very fortunate to have him. Eddie is a very experienced coach with a proven track record of success. He combines his intelligence and coaching ability with a tremendous work ethic, and he is going to be a very impactful asset to our program." End quote. Again, I'll suggest to you that things have to shake on the ground beneath your feet before you really start to quake in your boots. That's what's happening here, right? Maneri's job is never going to be in question after a relatively disappointing 2019 season, but you got to come correct. And with as much leeway as they have, with as many paid positions and then even volunteer positions as LSU baseball have, they have fortified their staff, I think, to the hilt at this point. Now it's going to be prove it time moving forward. All right, big show today. I already teased it. I told you we're heading to Progressive Field. Live from Cleveland in our next segment, our good friend Chandler Rome of the Houston Chronicle. He's chronicling the 2019 All-Star Game. We'll talk to him about the Astros, the LSU players involved, and more in our next segment. And at 4:45, make sure you're around for this one. We think all of our interviews are great, right? I'm very much anticipating our go at 4:45 with former Cajuns pitcher Phil Devey. He was at the visitation on Sunday. He was at Coach Robe's funeral yesterday. Phil Devey will join us in about 33 minutes. Again, I'll suggest you stick around for that one. At 5 o'clock, a double dip with Shea Dixon. Go247.com. First, he goes deep on LSU recruiting, and then he turns the tables on me. when we flip the script, it's all about this coach or that coach. He's going to make me pick who I would select if I were an AD in a lot of different categories. So don't go anywhere. Big program today, 4 to 6 p.m. It's Bumper to Bumper Sports, and we're live on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
One of them is famous in Cajun country. The other has a set of pipes that never quits. Seriously, we've tried before.
Cork. Now the tape.
Together, Ben and Clint bring you home on 103.7 The Game.
Our next guest, he's been running with the All-Star Pack in Cleveland. Excited to catch up with him. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports. Right back in on 103.7 The Game. Quickly, let's get out to the Artco Equipment Hotline. And it's Chandler Rome of the Houston Chronicle live from Cleveland. Chandler, how's it going in Cleveland so far?
I am really tired of writing about juiced baseball. But other than that, it's going well.
You know we're going there. I promise momentarily. But you've got other great content that's up at Houston Chronicle's website. Tell us about the two outfielders that the Astros have right now in Cleveland, George Springer, Michael Brantley, and how they've quickly formed a pretty tight bond.
Yeah, I think everybody sort of expected Michael Brantley to come in and be the consistent 300, 310, 315 hitter, be the left-handed bat in the top of the lineup that breaks up the righties, and he's done that. He's produced on the field about as well as the Astros could have anticipated, but I think what a lot of people are overlooking is the impact he's had in the clubhouse, and especially on George Springer. They're not too much different in age. Brantley's only 3 years older, but Springer is a guy that for most of his career, and I don't want to put words in his mouth, but this is kind of how he described it. For most of his career, he's not really had one veteran teammate to be able to go to as kind of a confidant, as kind of a guy that has his own position and can do everything. And Michael Brantley has been that and more for him. Springer's a guy that sometimes struggles with getting a little bit too emotional. He carries bad at-bats into the field. He lets a couple bad games kind of spiral on him, and his mood sours a little bit. And Brantley's been the guy this year that's kind of been able to get him away from that. And it kind of goes both ways, too, because Michael Brantley's a very stoic guy. He doesn't show much emotion, but when he's around Springer, he changes a little bit. Springer calls him Uncle Mike now, and that's probably about the best way to describe the relationship. It's not father-son. It's like a cool uncle around for George Springer, and it's really, really, really helped George Springer kind of take that next step in the big leagues because he's always been a good player, but I think getting that consistency and being a guy that can be relied upon every day no matter what's going on in his personal life, no matter what's going on in his baseball life, can be relied on every day to come to the field, put together some consistent time, consistent at-bats, and consistent defensive performances. So those two have really, really hit it off, and it's kind of fitting that both of them are starting this All-Star game.
Really was a cool story. I'm going to encourage our listeners to give it a look, HoustonChronicle.com. I know that Alex Bregman was in the Derby last night. Some other young stars stole the show. Are we prisoners of the moment, or was that one of the best ever from the Derby?
I mean, I've been watching the Derby for a long time, and there are moments you sort of remember. You remember Josh Hamilton going off a couple of years ago. Bryce Harper's win last year in D.C. was really cool, just to kind of how he did it. He walked it off. But what Vlad Guerrero Jr. did last night was pretty unbelievable. I mean, to hit 91 home runs in a day, I mean, I don't think we can fathom that. And that doesn't count. You know, they took batting practice twice before the Derby started. So that guy probably hit about 115, 120 home runs yesterday and still lost. I think it was really good for baseball, though, to have two young guys, two rookies, and Pete Alonso and Vlad Guerrero Jr., two guys in the finals like that. And it captivated. I mean, if you were on Twitter last night, people that don't follow baseball were into this. They turned the station over to ESPN and started watching the Derby. And that's what baseball needs right now. They need to reach out to a different sort of audience and then draw some more attention and get some more fans in. And I think the Derby last night did that without a shadow of a doubt.
Chandler Rome joining us live from Cleveland on 103.7 The Game. Bigger storyline, Justin Verlander starting tonight, or Justin Verlander saying that the baseballs are a bleeping joke right now?
Probably his interview with Jeff Passan yesterday. And I do want to stress that this is nothing new from Justin Verlander. I actually just wrote something that's going to go on HoustonChronicle.com here soon. But, I mean, I went back and listened, and after at least four of his starts this season, he's either made reference to the balls being juiced, he's outright said it, or he's just kind of subtly jabbed it in there. So this is not something that
definitely after
started.
Mexico, right?
Right. In Mexico, that was about as open and as candid as he got about the balls being juiced. But there's been other times where, like, he's given up a home run and he's kind of laughed and said, I know the balls are juiced, but that one was hit far. Like, he's always been able to kind of subtly and slyly work it into his answers. So the interview was really nothing new. The only new part was that he outright, on the record, accused Major League Baseball of being the one, the juice the balls. Coincidentally, Commissioner Rob Manfred met with the media today at the BBWAA luncheon and categorically denied that MLB is doctoring the baseballs, as you would expect. But he did reveal that they don't know why. They don't know why the balls are dragging less. They don't know why there's decreased drag on the balls that's making them go further. They're commissioning more studies to see why and what's going on, and changes could come, according to Manfred. But they said they want to be transparent and they want to let people know before they change the baseball when they're going to change the baseball. But Justin Verlander doesn't think that's going to happen. He's kind of set in his ways. If you read that story, you know why.
All right, help us settle some scores on the show, Chandler, on a couple of fronts. One, Jake Mariznick and smashing into Jonathan Lucroy, as much as Yadi Molina, the Cardinals, is maligning the play. How do you look at it?
I think it's really difficult, and I think, just my personal opinion, I do think a suspension is going to be coming for Jake Mariznick, but I'm going to tell you why. I think it's going to be more of a precedent setter. I don't think Jake Mariznick meant any ill intent. I think it was a split-second play, and it was just one of those, neither of those guys could have reacted in the split second that happened and to do anything about it. And sure, if you look at the play, it doesn't look great from Jake Mariznick's point of view. It looks as bad, maybe, as Jonathan Lucroy felt. But I do think, though, that the rule is there to prevent things like that. Baseball does not want to see a guy get knocked unconscious at the plate. And just that grisly sight, and knowing that the rule is there, the plate collision rule is there to prevent things like that, I think that's going to be the kind of a determining factor that I think, at least, that Jake Mariznick may incur some sort of suspension. And as far as Jake Mariznick goes, he is one of the least malicious human beings you'll ever meet. He's one of the nicest guys in the team, one of the more docile guys in the clubhouse. I know he meant no ill intent or ill harm. It just was a really unfortunate coincidence. I don't know if coincidence is right. It's just an unfortunate situation. It was a split-second thing, and unfortunately, it's good to hear that Jonathan Lucroy is better and getting better, but it's a tough deal for everybody, but I think MLB is going to want to set some sort of a precedent. So I wouldn't be shocked if there's a suspension handed down.
All right, our final score for Chandler Rome to settle. Am I a grump when I said on this program a few weeks ago I was surprised that Gerrit Cole made the All-Star game? I see the spin rate and the strikeouts and all that is great, but I'm just not sure he's having the season a lot of people expected. Where do you come in?
Look at the last month of June. I mean, he had a 1.80 ERA in June. Since May 22nd, he's lowered his ERA from 4.11 to 3.08. He's pitched really, really well this last month. And I think if you look at his overall line, that night in Arlington where he gave up 9 earned runs in, I think, 3 innings, that's going to hang with him for a while. And it's really tough to get your ERA down from that. I think his ERA was over 5 at that point. And there's just it just takes time to get that ERA looking better. But he's one of the best strikeout pitchers in the game. He had a really, really good month of June. And I think the thing that I always sort of appreciate with pitchers and how they're selected to the All-Star game is it's mainly a player vote. And the players are the ones that they face these guys every day. They know who really is All-Star worthy and who's not. And for Cole to get in on the player vote, I think that speaks a little bit more that, you know, these guys are cognizant that, yeah, he had a bad start in Arlington and his ERA is kind of askew because of it. But I think he certainly deserves to be an All-Star. And he won't pitch tonight unless the game goes into extra innings. But he certainly deserves to be here.
And that was an update that Chandler gave on Twitter about 20 minutes ago. Gerrit Cole, like relief pitcher Ryan Pressly, likely to pitch only in case of emergency tonight. Chandler, before we let you go, What do you make out of Cleveland, Progressive Field, as a baseball town, stadium, this environment?
I love Cleveland. I am a fan of Cleveland, and I get made fun of a lot because of, you know, I really do enjoy Cleveland. We were here a lot last year with the Astros. Obviously, they played the ALDS here a couple of days, and they came here for a four-game set. But Cleveland's done a great job of hosting this entire event. It's much better. Like, last year it was in D.C., and D.C. is just not really a walking place where you can kind of walk around. Everything's close here. There's restaurants and bars near the ballpark. You can walk to the media hotel. You can walk to where everything is here. Cleveland, they've done a great job putting this thing on. And we were talking to some writers last night. We went out to unwind after the home run derby, and we were talking about how well the downtown and how well the city is, like, set up for sports, for good sports teams, just because everything is nearby and everything's kind of in one place. It's a shame that the teams aren't better, but Cleveland is really well set up for good sports teams.
Odell and Jarvis are working on that, brother. Chandler, thanks for doing this. We'll be following your coverage tonight.
All right. Thanks, Ben.
Chandler Rome of the Houston Chronicle, a live scene setter outside of Progressive Field in Cleveland. We got to take a break. When we return, I'm going to give you the drop right now. I want to know who you think has the nastier starting lineup, the AL or the NL. There, the cat's out of the bag. We'll be right back in, and then Phil Devey, remembering Coach Tony Robichaux, in about 17 or 18 minutes. Busy back half of our 4 o'clock hour. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
Football season can't come fast enough.
No.
Are we there yet?
No.
Are we there yet?
No.
Are we there yet?
You little...
Luckily, you have Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love to help get you by.
It was my first time actually, you know, playing for a different organization at the major league level. So there's a little bit of butterflies, but at the same time, I wanted to make sure I didn't try to do too much. I think the thing with me is I was trying to stay within myself and not trying to impress anybody, just try to play my game. And I thought my game was good enough. But they opened me with open arms when I walked in the door. And, you know, the players, you know, worked really hard and only wanted to make me work harder. And, you know, I obviously got to this level, and it's because of my teammates.
Michael Brantley, having one heck of a season, batting 300, and tonight he'll bat eighth in the starting lineup for the American League. And I want to talk to you about those lineups, get your opinion as well. Bumper to Bumper Sports, right back in on 103.7 The Game. And yeah, that was the same Michael Brantley that may or may not have been eating a cheeseburger when I tried to interview him inside the Astros clubhouse prior to that game. Let's see if my dates are worth a you-know-what, CD. I think it was May 24 before they took on the Red Sox. He declined the interview and continued crushing said cheeseburger.
Yeah, it was Memorial Day weekend, and you're never going to live. You're never not going to bring that up, aren't you?
You know, I went for. Here's what I would tell you. And this is a bit of pre-shade at an all-star, so here I go throwing shade at Michael Brantley. But I went for the Brantley, but I stayed for the Bagwell.
I think it worked out quite well.
That went okay.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, that went fine. To talk to Jeff Bagwell, despite you accusing him of being a modern-age Metallica drummer, still, it was a lot of fun, man.
It's always awesome to kind of just hear the stories of you kind of interviewing Jeff Bagwell. The Jose Altuve interview, like, the story behind that is even more entertaining.
Do you remember what I told you about what Jose was doing right before that interview, now about a year and 2 months ago?
With, like, the coffee table book?
He was reading a coffee table book about, like, the world's most expensive watches.
It's amazing.
I watched that moment. Again, pun intended. Yeah, I know. I watched that moment about him looking at watches, and very, very immediately, a realization came to mind. Do you know what that realization was?
What was that?
I don't make nearly enough money. This dude was reading a coffee table book about the world's most expensive watches. He wasn't looking at the world's most expensive watches on his iPad,
yeah,
on a tablet, or a phone. A coffee table book.
That's as baller as baller can get, man.
I know. And yet we digress. All right, it's time to get to the question du jour, and I've already teed it up for you, but let's play the music. I'll ask it officially. Your Sink or Swim question of the day. What is your favorite coffee table book? No, that's not it. The real question, which lineup is nastier? Which starting nine is filthier tonight in Cleveland? The AL or the NL? I hate to go 1 through 9 for both sides, so why don't you just let Clint and I flesh out our arguments and you'll start to get a picture. But again, when you're ready, especially if you've seen them, call us and let us know. 706-0111.
I got to go AL here, and it's almost a landslide victory because I
Homer
just,
radio.
Homer radio? Well, I think it's more about what this team has. Like, there's a lot of youth around this team, and we talked about it earlier in the opening segment. Vlad Guerrero Jr. and his just ability, obviously, he probably won't hit too many homers. Mind you, it'd be great if he did, but it's definitely going to be tough after hitting 91 of them last night. But seeing what he did last night.
He's not in the starting lineup.
He's not. Oh, he's not. My bad. Well, you also got.
You got fake news, bro. You got bad information over there.
George Springer, though. He'll be
leading. Now you are going to make me go 1 through 9. Let's do this, and okay. Then we'll have all the cards on the table. American League. Springer, LeMahieu, Trout, Carlos Santana, Martinez, Bregman, Sanchez, Brantley, Polanco. So you got 3 Astros and 2 LSUers in there.
A lot
nowhere
of power.
Nowhere to be found is Vlad Guerrero, but that's awfully potent.
But a lot of power on that lineup. I mean, we talk about DJ LeMahieu. I'd probably say he's a first-half AL MVP candidate right now.
Yes.
Just of what we've seen, especially the last like month or so, dude has been on an absolute tear. George Springer in the starting lineup, batting leadoff. Ben, that's a recipe for disaster.
Well, it could be for the NL.
That's what I'm saying.
Astros fans are hoping so. What's odd to me is this. Okay. For so long, the AL has owned this game since the turn of the century. Every year that they haven't allowed it to end in a tie, the AL has owned this freaking game. And they've had maulers. This year, in my opinion, the American League probably is, again, I didn't do the legwork here, but just knowing the landscape and playing a hell of a lot of fantasy baseball, the American League appears to me to be not quite as potent, not quite as homer happy as the NL side. Maybe they're better OBP. Yeah, Springer leads you off. That's nice. Brantley batting 300-plus in the 8-hole. That's fantastic. But they've got guys that, yeah, they have. Don't get me wrong. There's power with Mike Trout. There's power with J.D. Martinez in the heart of that lineup. But 1 through 9, I don't think they have what the NL does this year. Not suggesting to you that the National League will win either. Again, it comes down to pitching, and you never know how long some of these guys will stay in the game. But let me learn you something about the National League 9. 1 through 6 is downright freaking terrifying, especially with the power. Christian Yelich, last year's NL MVP, is batting leadoff. So while you gave me Springer on the AL side, Yelich for the Brewers is incredible. Javi Baez for the Cubs, 2. Freddie Freeman, 20-plus home runs for the Braves, 3. Cody Bellinger, 30 home runs, leads the league in cleanup. Nolan Arenado for the Rockies, 5. And then Josh Bell of the Pirates, 6. That 1 through 6 is head and shoulders better than the AL 1 through 6. From there, you can make some arguments. Contreras catching for the Cubs is 7. Kettle Marte of the Diamondbacks, 8. And then Ronald Acuna Jr., pretty filthy 9-hole hitter, I would say. Give me the National League here. Bellinger with 30-plus home runs has been incredibly impressive. He is your NL MVP right now. It's not even close. He's the best player in baseball right now. Mike Trout, Christian Yelich, a couple other guys, they were maybe a stone's throw away. But through about 85 games, it's Cody Bellinger for the Dodgers. And again, Josh Bell, a homer double machine batting in the 6-hole. CD, I got to go with the National League this year. Again, you know I love the Cardinals. There are no Redbirds to be found out of those 9. So it's not homer radio, just spitting facts.
And, you know, like I said, you've got a lot of good points. I mean, the only thing that's kind of turning me off on the National League is you brought up Christian Yelich. He has a back injury that caused him to pull out of the home run derby, which could be beneficial for the NL in the All-Star game tonight. But I just feel like you just look all the way around on that AL starting lineup. They are strong. It's a lot of youth. It's a lot of guys that have been able to hit consistently, hit for power. We just look at the way baseball is now. You brought up OBP. I think it's an OPS game, and I think they've got them beat.
You just hit me with some real advanced analytics.
Yeah.
Ever so slightly, at least. All right, so the power.
I just added something in there.
Plus getting on base. Thought you were going to get one over on me there. Yeah. Hey, if you like drinking beer, Clint, this isn't for you, so ear muffin.
Okay.
But Gulf Brew is coming back later this month to Acadiana, and we want to send you there. Text Brew, BREW, to 68683. And you'll be entered to win a pair of tickets valued at $100 to the 2019 Gulf Brew Extravaganza at Blackham Coliseum. The event is Saturday, July 20, from 6 p.m. until 9 p.m. And again, your way to enter to get the free pair of tickets is text BREW Brew to 68683. All right, quick recess. When we return, Phil Devey, former Raging Cajuns pitcher, going to tell us about the man Tony Robichaux was in his life and the light that will shine moving forward. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports. We'll be right back in on 103.7 The Game.
You say tomato, I say tomato. The famous Clint D says something none of us will agree with. Back to more top shelf analysis for your drive home. It's Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
Just a hair past quarter to 5 o'clock. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, back in and live on 103.7 The Game. Our pleasure to head out to the Artco Equipment Hotline and bring back on the program Phil Devey, former Raging Cajuns pitcher. Phil, I know it's been an incredibly trying last week or two, so I won't ask you how you're doing, but I will thank you for the time, and I know we want to remember a great man today.
No, I'm doing okay. I'm enjoying listening to various radio programs, and I've never been on Facebook as much as I have been in the last 2 days of my life. It's been therapeutic, and it's been just good to see how important Coach Robichaux was to so many different people, not just players, but people involved in the university and people that have met him along the way. So talking about him and seeing how important he was in the lives of so many people is made it comforting, for me. So it's been good.
Phil, you've been on this show before and told a bit of your story and how kind of you happened to Cajun country, right? So how a Canadian descended upon the UL program. Give me the other side of it. How were you received coming from where you did by Tony Robichaux?
The way I'm received by most people that meet me for the first time, I probably disappoint them. I would think that he was expecting someone a little bigger, a little bit more athletic looking. So I think he has said that before, that he was expecting something different when I walked in the door. So there you go. His first impression, I would imagine, was disappointment.
As he got to know you and he saw the competitor that you were and the skills that you had, I guess give us a little insight about who he was specifically as a coach and a pitching coach helping you hone your craft.
The mental part of it was what separated him from everyone else. Obviously he was helpful in terms of the mechanics of pitching and the strategy involved in pitching. But when you get into Division I baseball and the professional baseball, it's the mental part of the game is the separator. And there was nobody better than him. He figured out a way to make me want to perform at my absolute best at all times. And I mean, that's very hard to do. And he did it in various ways, whether it was from things that he said, things that he did. A lot of times it's just in his actions and me watching him that it would just inspire me to be better. I played for some years in the minor leagues, and I never made it to the big leagues, and I never had a chance to tell him this personally, and I wish I would have, but I know in my heart that being around him made me the pitcher that I was. And when that wasn't there for me as far as pitching in professional baseball, I don't want to say my inspiration was gone, but my enjoyment wasn't there as much. And it wasn't just Coach Rowe, it was the teammates that I had as well. That's what made me pitch and perform to the best of my abilities. And over the years and not having him around, my enjoyment of the game diminished, my performance diminished, and And I know he was the catalyst, and he was the one that brought the best out of me. And you know, to me, that's what made him, you know, such a unique coach. And even using a word or describing him as a coach is just, it does not give him justice at all. I couldn't, you know, and I guess it's almost like giving someone a title, but I mean, he was just above all that. And I'm sure your listeners and everyone else is starting to get a sense of that. And, you know, it's also one of the reasons why I'm honored, and I'm, you know, it's been a difficult week, but I've had many people tell me, you know, that didn't know Coach Robichaux, but that are hearing things and seeing things, and, you know, they're telling me, man, I didn't know he was like that, or, you know, I didn't know he was so inspiring. And that's the, you know, I want the public to understand and know how big of a loss this is to our community. And so the more, you know, the more we talk about it, the more educated our you know, our community gets and understands who he really was.
Former Raging Cajun pitcher Phil Devey, our guest on 103.7 The Game. Phil, how would you describe the impact that Coach had on your life after baseball as a family man, an entrepreneur, a philanthropist, everything that you're doing now?
He's the most important, most influential person in my life. I've never met anyone like him. I've never had anyone impact me to that degree like him. I'm so lucky. I'm so fortunate that I made the decision to get on the plane and come to Louisiana. It was, you know, just a godsend gift to me to be able to be under, you know, under the guidance of Coach Rowe. So, yeah, he was the most influential person. He was the person I could text or call at any time for anything, for any question. I kind of made a joke to a few people that, you know, I'm going to make wristbands and say, what would Rowe do? And you know, anytime I'm at a crossroads or I think of something or a tough situation or how to handle my kids, or all I got to do is ask myself, what would Coach Rowe do? And instantly I know the answer. And it's always the right answer. It's always the right approach. It's always the right thing to do. And you know, if I can just stay true to that the rest of my life, then, you know, I'll have lived a great life.
Phil, I know that the visitation on Sunday, incredibly well attended, and that speaks to the man that he was. And then, of course, yesterday, a lot more intimate. How would you describe, I guess, the funeral that you attended? And when you looked around you, I guess, what was a common thread you noticed about everybody who cared so much about that man and what he did for them?
It was just a great variety of various people that represented, you know, various industries or various schools or various years that, you know, meaning there's a lot of players that were with him at McNeese, all the family members, a lot of people that I just, you know, never met over the years, and how close and a lot of people from Crowley and what a great community that is and how much they supported him and loved him. Players from, you know, from the late 90s all the way to today's players that were there. You know, I saw Coach Benary, I saw Skip Bergman over there. You know, I was told that, you know, there's some other coaches. I think the South Alabama coach was there maybe on Sunday. I saw the Lou Chiefs there. I saw, you know, I saw other coaches from other programs. There's such a huge circle, a huge network of people that had a tremendous amount of respect for Coach Rowe, that they took the time to come, you know, to celebrate him and honor him and mourn him at his funeral, that it was, you know, it was just really nice to see. It was a very sad day. But again, in true Coach Rogue fashion, it was an inspirational day. I mean, you look around the room and you see all the different, people that came to pay tribute to him, that, you know, it makes you hope that, you know, when your time comes, that you did your job and you reached so many people on so many different levels. So, you know, even though he's passed, he's still inspiring me to be better.
Phil, I know we spoke briefly yesterday before the funeral. I'm very appreciative of your time today. Thank you for doing this, and I hope in some way it's been as cathartic for you as I know it has been for our listeners.
It has been. That's why we got to keep doing it. So, you know, I appreciate you reaching out and having me on your show and giving me the opportunity to talk to your listeners about, you know, the greatest man I've ever known.
It's been a pleasure. And that's Phil Devey, former Raging Cajun pitcher. And again, can't tell you how difficult this has been for so many of the people that have joined us on the program starting on Wednesday. I really do want to thank Phil Devey. He and I spoke a little yesterday, as I mentioned, to try and set this up. Today fit a little better, I think, for him, for everybody. Unbelievable. When you think about what yesterday must have been like for him, everybody that was there. And I'll continue to tell you the story that I heard over the weekend, that Colleen Robichaud was reaching out to friends of the family within hours of her husband's death last Wednesday, asking how they were doing. An incredibly giving family. Glad to have people like Phil Devey on this program giving back to Robe and sharing in that legacy, and we will keep doing that. All right, we're almost halfway home in our show today. CD, let's wind down hour number one with a final word.
What's up, Acadiana? I'm Gabe Broussard from Strange Theories and Season 11 of The Boys. It's almost 5 o'clock. Now it's time for the final word of the hour, and it's presented to you by me and my family at the Village Station. We are your final stop to fill up your stomach and your tank when you're heading home on Maurice Avenue. Now, here's Ben. His voice is pretty nice, but I don't think he could ever make two chairs turn.
Everyone, after, I don't know, a week, 10 days ago, telling you that the Warriors were thinking about retiring Kevin Durant's jersey following three seasons, today the report is out. Golden State intends to retire Andre Iguodala's jersey, Oprah style at this point. You get a retired jersey, you get one. Yeah, yeah, you get my point. It's everyone at this juncture. That's the final word of this hour. And it's brought to you by the Village Station. We'll be right back in. Shay Dixon coming with us. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
All the projections are coming in, and the expectations of LSU football soaring through the roof. One publication, well, we'll tell you where they feel the Tigers will end up. The NBA Summer League is in full strength, and the Pelicans, with some new breed of talent on their team, showed why they were worthy high draft picks. What is the SEC going to be like from the quarterback position? We'll have an expert analyst decide that, and we'll go back in the time machine. Where in the world is Josh Booty today? All these stories and more, jam-packed today. Tuesday, July 9th, 2019.
Alexander Walker, Williams, up top.
Nice play. A kid like that in college can get lost on his team because he's not an overly skilled guy. And college coaches are not going to run plays for him. But because he's athletic, he's long, and a natural talent just takes over.
Anjual with the mid-range. Joji with the board. And that might do it for China. Joji fouled. And the Chinese national team on the verge of a win here.
Heading towards the scoreboard up there in left field, and it hit way off, about midway through that scoreboard for a 400. And here's another one in that direction. He's definitely put on the most impressive power show tonight.
Ah, welcome. Oh, the Home Run Derby. I know he didn't win it, but he should have. Vlad Guerrero Jr. What a monster. What a show. It was great. Welcome. How are you? It is Tuesday, and it's great to be with you. Jordy Helberg here. So thankful that you are there, along with my producer extraordinaire, CD, back in the 237 Roof Studios on the campus of Delta Media, KLWB 1037 The Game, and around the world on 1037thegame.com. Major League Baseball takes center stage. It's the Midsummer Classic. Alex Bregman, DJ LeMahieu, lots of other Astros, Justin Verlander on the bump. So it's a fun, fun night. I'm so glad they did away with the winner gets home field advantage. I'm so glad they did away with that. It just really made no sense. It's supposed to be an all-star game. You let everybody play, you have fun, and you let the players do their thing. So I'm glad they got wise and got away from that one. You know, we have so much to offer. Thanks to the people behind the scenes that do so much work at 103.7 The Game with the website and everything that they do with it. We've got some preseason rankings online at 1037thegame.com. And the old football power index is out, which factors into account a team's performance over the past four seasons, with the most emphasis on last season, returning starters at quarterback, on offense, on defense, whether a team has a returning head coach, and recruiting rankings over the past four seasons. Put that all in the blender, you spit it out, and you got Clemson 1, Alabama 2, Georgia 3, and LSU number 4. And then they run a simulation of 10,000 different scenarios. 10,000. And they come up with projections on games and wins and losses. Because they play against Alabama and because Georgia's in the same, it just shows you how tough the SEC is. LSU's chances of winning the SEC are slim, 11.4% due to the challenging schedule. But that early season showdown against Texas on the road in week two, this football power index gives LSU a 74.4% chance of beating Texas. Just goes to show you, you got to play Florida, Auburn, Mississippi State, Alabama, Ole Miss, Arkansas, A&M. It's just brutal. But here's what they have. Georgia Southern, August 31st. That's 96.7% chance of winning. You know how this is going to go. At Texas, September 7th. LSU, according to the FPI, a 74.4% chance of winning. Week 3, Northwestern State comes to town, and that's the... I don't know if you can get any higher than 99.8%. I don't know if anybody gets 100%, but 99.8% winning percentage on that one. On the road at Vanderbilt, LSU with an 84% chance to win that one. Utah State comes to Tiger Town. The Tigers should go 5-0 at that time with a 98% chance of winning versus Utah State. Finally, Florida comes to town after all those years in Gainesville, and the FPI has LSU going 6-0 with a 70.3% chance to beat Dan Mullen, Felipe Franks, and the rest of the gang. You got to go to Mississippi State. Tough place to play of late. LSU going 7-0 with a 65.3% chance of winning. So, we'll see. That could be, you know, that's not much margin of error. Auburn comes to town, and LSU has a 71.8% chance. Going back, this FPI has LSU splitting between the Gators and the Bulldogs. So, after they beat Auburn, they've got LSU at 7-1 overall. 7-1. It's always tough. Auburn, you know, they know each other well. Then you got to go to Alabama November the 9th. And, of course, that's where things, you know, and I'm just going to tell you like they say it. Alabama with LSU has a 25.2% chance of winning. And the word is, until LSU proves it can beat, heck, even score against Alabama, the computer simulation model isn't going to favor the Tigers in this matchup. It's always the toughest game of the season for LSU. That's just the way it is. Ole Miss, LSU goes to 8-2. They don't expect much on the road from the Rebels. LSU with an 83% chance of winning, a 94% chance of winning against Arkansas, and a 73.4% chance of winning versus A&M at home on November the 30th, having LSU finish the season at 10-2. I don't think LSU fans would be happy with 10-2 this year. I just don't. I think they would be upset if they lost to either Florida or Mississippi State. I think they expect to win every game, except when you have to go to Tuscaloosa. So that's just one projection. It just kind of shows you a difference 1 year can make. It just does. A proven quarterback. A head coach with 2 feet on the ground who's secure and not looking over his shoulder. A great defense. They're going to have that with some star power. They may have as many as 4 first-round picks before it's all said and done if they all stay healthy. Another really good recruiting class. Schedule more favorable this year than it was a year ago, and they still won 10 games overall. This has LSU 10-2. They go to a good bowl game. They win that one. That's 11 wins. Then Tua leaves, and maybe just maybe, right? Maybe just maybe. Well, you got to play the game. We'll see. But it just goes to show you that the projections are up there. And that's always a good thing. Let me tell you what we have on the program today. Will Guillory, the Athletic, will join us in just a few minutes. Summer League going on. Pelicans, we'll find out the latest. Their draft choices all signed so they could go play. And Jackson Hayes had the dunk of the day. My goodness. I don't know if you saw it, but eyes at the level of the rim, elbow at the level of the rim, and arm almost to the top of the backboard. It is scary. Scary. So we'll talk about that with Will Guillory. Matt Wyatt will join us. He's our quarterback whisperer. How good is the league, the SEC, when it comes to quarterback play, and where does he have Joe Burrow ranked and his thoughts on Joe Burrow? Nobody breaks down quarterback play better than Matt Wyatt. Andrew Lopez will join us in hour number 2 after we do our daily Hot Topics segment, and then we'll check in. He was a superstar in high school. Won every award, more going up against the likes of Jake Delhomme and Peyton Manning. Was offered a signing bonus of $1.6 million to go play baseball for the newly formed Florida Marlins. He went and played baseball for 4 or 5 years, had enough, came back to play quarterback at LSU. Where in the world is Josh Booty today? We'll talk with him in hour number 2. It's all coming your way. Sit back and relax. It's Tuesday. It's the dog days of summer, but we're going to make it happen here on the Jordy Helper Show, brought to you by ShopRite, Tobacco Plus discount outlets. Over 60 of them in southern and central Louisiana. They keep on growing and growing. Why? Because people want them. Because they've got everything you need. Everything you need. If you can't shop right at ShopRite, you can't shop right at all. When we come back, we'll get things started. Will Guillory, the Athletic, in Viva Las Vegas. Talking hoops next. The Jordy Helfrich Show, 103.7 The Game. 103.7thegame.com. We are Acadiana Sports Station.
Who's got game, and who's the next big thing at LSU? Jordy Hultberg will set you straight on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
Welcome back. The George Show. On a Tuesday, bigger and better than ever. Dog days of summer are here. We're efforting to get to Will Guillory of The Athletic. He had a big, big Vegas Summer League. They had a big athletic meeting going on. And he may be detained just a little bit, but we will press on. Summer League going on. And, you know, with these trades that just got finalized after, you know, everybody waiting for Kawhi, what's he going to do? Well, he finally commits and says he's going to the Clippers, and all the dominoes fall into place. So all the contracts are signed, and so Jackson Hayes and the rest can go join up with the Summer League team. And they took on the Chicago Bulls. He hadn't practiced, hadn't done anything. He just shows up, and he goes up, and he showed his – now, look, he showed his versatility, showed some skills. It's Summer League. It's the Chicago Bulls. It's not like you're playing the Milwaukee Bucks or Kawhi or LeBron and Anthony Davis. So, and you're not playing Denver or Portland or all the other great teams in the West. But still, it's a basketball play. And the fact that he was able to do that bodes very, very well. Clint, I think Will is ready now if you want to. Oh, no. Okay. Never mind. It's all good. We'll do that another time. So we'll just fill in the time here with that. But it's just, it shows you, look, the Pels have depth. And it's going to be very interesting to see how Alvin Gentry utilizes this, because you can have two groups, and the second group that gets in, your reinforcements, your non-starters, shouldn't fall that far below what the starters do. They should have enough scoring emphasis to earn the faith and the trust of the coaching staff. How many times in the past have you seen, you know, you take out this guy, you take out that guy, and there's no scoring punch, and you're trying to steal minutes in the course of a marathon season, and you just fall behind. Let me tell you about the West now. You get a bad 10-game stretch, you're done. You're out of it. You're not going to be able to compete. So that's just the way it goes. So to have depth is really, really good. Frank Jackson played himself out of summer league ball. He had 30 points in one game, and they said, we don't need to see you play anymore. We're not going to let all these other teams look at you and try to get you from us or getting a scouting report on you. So we're just going to kind of hide you. We don't need you to play in the summer league. Don't need Zion Williamson to play in the summer league. You're looking to fill spots on your G League team, and you're looking to see who else is out there playing and playing well, and that will help for the future. So it's a who's who type of thing out there, and it's amazing. You go back to that Friday night game last week with Zion playing in his first game. They had 20,000 people show up in a basketball arena for a glorified scrimmage. 20,000. And they were all there to see the number one pick. That's what this guy brought. The NBA will be so thankful. Every team in the league will be so thankful, because when the Pelicans come to town, it'll be sold out, because everybody wants to see this kid play. And you don't get to see that very, very often. However, the Pels are so much more than that. And we've got a soundbite here. David Griffin talking about, you know, he said he's trying to deflect pressure off of Zion. He's trying to deflect pressure. So he's called it time after time Drew Holiday's team. And Drew Holiday is in the prime of his career. And remember, his wife was going through a terrible, terrible illness, and he took a leave of absence. And the Pelicans were very faithful to him. They bent over backwards and honored him, kept paying him and said, take all the time you need. He had a leave of absence. A leave of absence. And that stuck with Drew Holiday. And when he came back, he was a man possessed. And he's put back-to-back years together. And David Griffin pulled no punches. Listen to what he said about Drew Holiday. Listen up.
I do, and nobody thought Steve Nash was, and he was two-time MVP, and right. People would have thought we were insane for even uttering that notion. Players in this league are so gifted. When you're as good as Drew Holiday is, what makes you take the next step is just your vision of self. And sometimes you need to be given permission to dominate people. And in his situation with Anthony around, I think he was always sort of waiting as though it was Anthony's job, and now Drew knows it's his job, and he's ready to do that.
Ready to be an MVP. So, once again, he wouldn't be saying this if he didn't think Drew Holiday would welcome it, accept the challenge, and go from there. Is David Griffin done? Maybe, maybe not. They still, you know, they've got 16 players on their roster right here, right now. You can only carry 15, and you're not going to play more than 10 at the most during a game. So something's going to happen, and what they do and how they come about it, there's no telling. No telling what they're going to do, but they're going to do something. But again, this isn't a team ready to win a Western Conference. This is a team that right here, right now, based upon what's going on in the West with the Lakers, the Clippers, the Denver Nuggets, the Portland Trail Blazers. I mean, there's the San Antonio Spurs. I know I'm leaving some teams out. Dallas is going to be better. Houston. I mean, there's a lot of spots available that are taken already. Oklahoma City's going to drop. There's no question they're going to drop. That would be the one team that made the playoffs that's not going to make the playoffs this year. Somebody can take their place. Who's that going to be? Might be the Pels. A lot of things have to fall into place. A lot of things. Zion has to be all that and then some. And Lonzo Ball and Brandon Ingram have to take quantum leaps in their game. Josh Hart has to come back, become that shooter that he was prior to his injury. Jahlil Okafor has to continue to come back and get better. Jackson Hayes has to make a leap. Frank Jackson has to get better. I mean, there's a lot of things that have to fall into place. A lot of things. They've got to get better defensively. They got to rebound the basketball. And outside shooters got to make shots. It's a catch and shoot league. Catch and shoot league. You got to shoot it. You got to make it. I like the Pels' chances. I like LSU's chances this year in the college football season. I really, really do. Again, preseason talk is wonderful. Expectations are great. You got to get through camp uninjured. You got to keep your key players injury-free. And you got to get them ready for 12 Saturdays. Everything else doesn't matter. They got to be ready to go 12 Saturdays out of the year. And it all starts at the quarterback spot. And I think because LSU's returning a quarterback who ended the season as well as he did, the expectations have increased exponentially with him. At this time a year ago, Joe Burrow wasn't even on campus. Now he's had a season under his belt, a spring under his belt, a fall and summer sessions continuing under his belt, and he's ready for another fall. Matt Wyatt is a quarterback whisperer. He'll tell us his thoughts on Joe Burrow and the rest of the quarterbacks in the SEC next here on the Jordy Helfrich Show. 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com. My heart is black and my lips
are cold. There's only one place you'll find all the movers, shakers, and Tigers newsmakers. And it's right here on the Jordy Hultberg Show on 103.7 The Game.
Welcome back. The Jordy Helfrich Show, brought to you by Hooters. Hooters just makes you happy. I call him the quarterback whisperer. He breaks down quarterback play and dissects it as well as anybody that does it in the business. He is the color analyst for the Mississippi State Bulldogs, and he does a whole bunch of other things as well. Kind enough, on his vacation with his toes in the sand, enjoying some fun and sun, to join us today, Matt Wyatt. Matt, I had no idea. Thank you so much, buddy. And pop open a cold one for me, will you?
Yeah, Jordy, I'm happy to do that. I sure am. You know, and I tell you what, it does my heart good anytime. You know, like I come on your show and you're playing Boston as the bumper coming back in. That's great. So I'm happy to join you all the way around.
Oh, that's great. Well, thank my producer extraordinaire for that one. But everybody is saying from top to bottom, the SEC is without doubt, hands down, the best conference in the country. That doesn't mean a certain team can't beat another team, but top to bottom. So I wanted to talk to the quarterback whisperer. So much is, depends upon the quarterback play. Top to bottom, how do you rank the quarterbacks coming into this season for the SEC?
Yeah, well, you don't beat around the bush, do you, Jordy? I mean, we're just going to get right to it.
Right to it, baby.
It's not as easy as I think, you know, people might think. I still think that Tua Tagovailoa is the number one passer, the number one playmaker in the league at that position. You know, just so impressed with him. And as it goes, you know, you have a hiccup or two in your second year in the league, and he didn't win a national championship this time, so now there are naysayers. But when you watch him over the long haul, the way he gets the ball out, the way it's on time, the way it's accurate, you know, I think he's number one. But Jake Fromm is a winner. He's right up there. That kind of goes without saying. And those two guys have such great players around him.
Let me ask you a question about Tua.
Okay.
Now that Jalen Hurts is gone, not that he ever looked over his shoulder, but did he look over his shoulder maybe once or twice?
Well, you know, I guess depending on personality, Jordy, that's always a possibility. You know, and we all approach things differently in life. You know, you're different than me. I'm different than you. You'd have to really know those guys. Here's the way I think those kinds of things play out more often than not, though, and that is competition is good. And I don't care if it's uncomfortable. Sometimes uncomfortable competition is the best competition you can have, especially a quarterback. And I think that's what they had at times at Alabama. I mean, don't you think that was obvious? I know you remember, you know, the first time in forever that an Alabama player had said anything to the media that wasn't flattering about his own coaching staff, and that's what Jalen Hurts did. So, yeah, okay, fine, it's uncomfortable, but if I'm a coach, I kind of want it to be that way. I want it to be heated. I don't want it to be nasty and divide people, but I want you to really desire and want to beat the other guy because that means you're going to be better. And so my only question is, without Jalen Hurts there applying the pressure, what's this offseason going to be like for Tua? You know, how heated is that going to be? I think the dynamic they had was actually a good thing for Alabama in the past.
Matt Wyatt, kind enough to join us. You mentioned the two quarterbacks, and that's, I think, with the SEC Media Days rapidly approaching next week, you're going to have Alabama picked as the favorite in the West. You're going to have Georgia picked as the favorite in the East, and they've got the two best quarterbacks. Now is when it becomes interesting from there. And who do you have as your third best quarterback going into the league this year?
Yeah, that is a really fun conversation to have. Because you got some great players that are maybe up for that spot. But, you know, there's a couple of guys that I really like that I think probably don't get enough credit. And they're guys who are returning. And Joe Burrow at LSU is one of those. Okay. And the other, I think, Felipe Franks at Florida, part of that is, yeah, I'm doing some projecting in my own head. I realize that. At times last year, you know, not flashy or fantastic, but really solid. I felt like I saw Felipe Franks getting better. I felt like he was better at the end of the year than he was at the beginning. You know, you go watch him in that loss early on to Kentucky and then watch the tape of that win over Michigan. Even though the numbers aren't huge, he's a different quarterback from a confidence standpoint at the end of the year. So the reason I say I'm projecting a little bit on Felipe Franks is because I know what Dan Mullen does with quarterbacks. Everybody that has played quarterback for Dan Mullen over the last 10 to 15 years improves every year. Everybody that plays quarterback for Dan Mullen plays better than people expect him to. And I think Felipe Franks is going to be no different. And, Jordy, what I really like about Joe Burrow is I just see a winner. You know, he was never that 350, 400-yard-a-game guy. I know he had a big game passing against Rice, a big one against UCF. But for the most part, they didn't ask him to go out there and throw it 30 times and throw for 350 yards. But he did what they needed him to do, and he was a bounce-back guy, tough guy. You know, he's on the road in his first ever SEC game at Auburn, down with 2 minutes left. He gets popped on a third down play at midfield, Auburn celebrating. And what does Joe Burrow do? He stands back in there on fourth down against pressure, throws a strike, complete for a first down, kick a field goal, and win. And then later in the year, Joe is he's at Florida. They got a chance to do the same thing, go win with a field goal, and he throws a pick six. Florida wins the game. How did he respond? The very next week, he leads them to a win over Georgia. You know, and he wasn't flashy in the Georgia game. What he was just he made plays. And I just see a guy who's tough. I think his team believes in him. And I think that if he makes another step this year, just in terms of consistency and hits a few more plays, I think he could easily be that third guy in the conference.
Dude, for 57.8%, I know LSU wants to get him into the 60s somehow, some way. Nearly 2,900 yards. 16 touchdowns to only 5 picks. That's pretty good ratio. And he, as he got a little bit healthier, and as his backup Miles Brennan got healthier, they kind of turned him loose a little bit. And against A&M and UCF in the Fiesta Bowl, he was pretty good.
Yeah, he was really good. And you know, and again, made clutch plays, like when you're up against it in an overtime game against A&M. And you can't really, it's hard to measure clutch, but your teammates feel it. You know, they know it. And I felt like, Jordy, two things that you're touching on. When he won that game at Auburn, I felt like from then on, like everybody in that locker room is on board. This is our guy. We're playing with this guy. And you have to have that atmosphere in order to go win. What do? They won 10 games. And then the other thing is, you know, leading in the offseason, and he's doing that also. Another thing that Joe did, I watched the tape. There are a lot of times when he's standing in the pocket, eyes downfield, about to make a throw, even though he's getting pressured and going to get hit, but he never shied away from contact, and it didn't break down his footwork, and teammates respect that. And keep this in mind. You talk about the 58% completion. You know, how many times is he throwing easy completions on bubble screens?
Yeah.
You know, there are a lot of guys who can go out here and throw 65% when 10 of my 20 completions are behind the line of scrimmage.
That's
so
true.
I liked what he did within their scheme and what they were asking him to do.
You played the position. He's getting a new set of eyes and a new set of thoughts from Joe Brady, who, I mean, if you're going to learn how to play offense, it's pretty good to go with Sean Payton and Drew Brees. And this RPO thing is coming into play, I think. And the fact that he did what he did coming into fall camp. He didn't have a summer. He didn't have all that. He's one of these grad transfer guys. It's kind of remarkable what he did. And I believe, and I agree with you, there's something about that guy that got, that your teammates will run through a wall for. And I think that's what he has earned. And I'm with you. I like what he brings.
I like it, too. And you know, at LSU, you're always going to have a roster that is loaded enough that in order to win, you don't have to be the star at quarterback.
Yeah.
You don't have to be. And look, man, when you have that group of running backs and you got those receivers coming in every year, you're loaded on defense every year, your teammates respect that as a quarterback, you recognize, look, my job is to just, number one, take care of the ball and get it in the hands of everybody else. It's not to be the star. My job is not to draw attention. And that's the way I see Joe going about his business, and I have so much respect for that. And you're right, an off-season, a spring, all of that, I don't think the RPO stuff's going to be any problem for him because he ran it in high school. His high school numbers are through the roof. And I'll tell you this, Jordy, after I posted the Joe Burrow film study video, I got a comment on the YouTube channel from a guy that said, hey, I coached against Joe Burrow in high school, and he might be the smartest high school player that we ever faced. And, you know, when you have that reputation.
I'll take that.
In an RPO offense, man, you'll take that all day.
I'll take that. Matt Wyatt, kind enough to join us. Let's talk about at your place with a Louisiana native, Keaton Thompson, under Joe Moorhead, ranked as one of the best offensive coordinators in college football prior to getting the gig in Starkville. What do you see in Thompson? How big of a step do you think he's going to make this year?
Well, I'll tell you, Jordy, a lot of people are kind of just automatically counting him out. In their conversation, I say a lot of people, I mean out in the media and on message boards and stuff, a lot of people count him out because they went out and brought in Tommy Stevens, this one-year grad transfer from Penn State. I don't think it's wise to count him out because you've seen it. Keaton, at every level he's ever played, he just scores points.
He gets them
in the end zone. And every chance they've given him at State, as a freshman, he had to start in the bowl game against Lamar Jackson at Louisville because Nick Fitzgerald was hurt. And he outplayed Lamar Jackson in a bowl win. To start last season, Nick Fitzgerald was suspended for one game. Keaton started the game to begin the year last year. He accounted for 7 touchdowns. He ran 2 and threw 5. It wasn't always pretty, and sometimes it was risky, and he just kind of maybe got lucky on a throw or two. He just gets them in the end zone. So I think to count him out is silly. I think that it's not coach speak that they really do want a heightened competition at that position, and I don't think they felt like they had anybody old enough yet in that room already that could challenge Keaton and push him. And so I think that's one of the big things that you can watch at State. It's a sure enough competition at that position. It's not granted to anybody, and it'll be week to week in August.
Yeah. Matt Wyatt, kind enough to join us. One more, we'll get you out of here. You talked about how effective Dan Mullen is in getting quarterbacks to improve year by year. A lot of people say the same thing about Jimbo Fisher, one of the best quarterback gurus in college football. Kellen Mond showed some marked improvement last fall. Is he ready to take another step forward? Because that makes A&M really dangerous.
Yeah, I think he probably is. One thing that I don't know this, I'm not in their room, but I would guarantee you that one thing Jimbo is really preaching and working on with Kellen is being comfortable in the pocket and being okay with getting hit. You know, if you're going to play college football at that position, getting hit by opposing players can't be something that bothers you.
That's
got to be, you know, part of the game. And what you see with Kellen is a guy who, yes, because he can really run and knows it, sometimes he wants to leave too quick. Other times he wants to kind of adjust what he's doing back there and the timing on throws based on whether or not he's getting pressured. You kind of have to be like Joe Burrow. You got to stand in there and just get hit and throw it and then pop back up. And, yeah, it hurts, but it feels a lot better if you complete it. They're working on him, I think, to become more of that steadfast guy, stand in there, run the plays we call, and we're not going to, you know. And the other thing is, too, throwing the ball into traffic. So they've got, you know, some stuff that they can improve with him. Jimbo's a guy who, right, like a lot like Dan Mullen, a lot of pressure on his guys in practice because he wants the game to be a lot easier than practice. And that's one thing that Mullen and Jimbo Fisher both have in common.
Well, it should be interesting. A lot of good quarterbacks, a lot of good teams in this thing. Yeah, I don't know. It should be a wild ride, man. And that LSU-Texas game, second week of the season,
it's great.
Got a lot of people's attention.
Yeah, I cannot wait for that one because you got everything. You got a Texas team that beat Georgia in a bowl game. Yeah, Georgia was kind of disinterested, but still it's a good Texas team improving. And you're at their place, and frankly, Joe Burrow showed it last year. We'll go on the road in front of 80,000 in Auburn and other places, and we'll go beat you. So I can't wait for that one.
Yeah. Just tell me what it looks like from your view right here, right now. Just tell me what you're looking at, please. Break my heart.
Yeah, I'll tell you. Okay, so, you know, white sandy beaches on the Alabama coast have come back into the air conditioning and looking out the window because it's brutally hot, as you well know.
Yes. Yes.
And we got a little thunder shower coming in from the west blowing in here, going to cool us off, going to eat some lunch, and then head right back out there and, you know, send sunscreen. Forward any sunscreen you have. I need it all.
Oh, don't wear that Mississippi State hat inside the floor of Bama, okay? They may not like you there.
If you find me in the floor of Bama, things have gone way sideways, Jordy. I promise
we
you
that. We can't relive our youth? We cannot relive our youth? Come on.
No, my back reminds me of that every day. We cannot relive it.
Matt, have a great vacation, and we look forward to talking to you when LSU and the Bulldogs tee it up. It's always a pleasure, man. Thank you so much.
Yeah, my pleasure too, Jordy. See you.
Take care, Matt Wyatt. Kind enough to join us on his vacation. We're going to take a timeout. We'll come back, wrap up hour number one, the Jordy Helpert Show. 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com, Acadiana's sports station.
You're listening to the Jordy Helpert Show on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. Want to get in on the action? Call us up on the Ardco Equipment Hotline at 337-706-0111.
Welcome back. 52 minutes after the hour. Oh, Matt Wyatt had some good things to say about Joe Burrow. That's awesome. Clint, I got to ask you a question. Did you see that the Best of Acadiana came out? All kinds of topics and restaurants and health care and dog care and all kinds of. They didn't have our show on there, man. What's up? What's wrong with them?
I don't know,
they didn't have
Jordy.
A category.
I don't know, Jordy. We're gonna have to talk to them for 2020 to have that. You know.
Yeah, I mean, gee whiz, gotta have best sports talk show out
exactly,
there.
Exactly. You know. I think we could definitely 103.7 The Game would sweep that hands down.
Maybe that's why they did it. Didn't do it. They didn't want to have total domination. That's all I can think of. Anyway, got some interesting things though. I mean, I gotta go to Rockin' Bowl. That sounds like fun. You ever been there?
I have not been there. I don't normally go out downtown, but I definitely that's on the list of things I need to go wind up doing down. In the not too distant future,
best live music. You can bowl and listen to good live music. Man, that sounds like fun. Anyway, the advertiser came out with the Best of Acadiana. They got about a million categories. No best sports radio show, sports talk show. They didn't have a category for it. I got to go talk to them. I got to give them a piece of my mind and figure out what it's all about. Looking forward to talking to Josh Booty in hour number two. He was a back in 1993, he was quarterback at Evangel High School. He was the first high school quarterback in the history of high school quarterbacking to throw for over 10,000 yards in a career. Threw for like 11,000 yards. They just lined up in a shotgun. It wasn't like they were 5 yards back or 7 yards. They were like in punt formation. And they'd snap it back to him, and they'd just throw it all the time. It drove people crazy. If you remember the movie with Denzel Washington, where they had Denzel Washington was the head coach, and they went out into the woods, and you know they integrated a school. What was the name of the show? Come on, Clint, you know what I'm talking about.
Remember the Titans, Jordy.
That's it. Remember the Titans. It was like they were playing in the championship game, and that team came out in the shotgun, and the Titans were like, well, what is this, the NFL? What are they doing? Well, that's what Evangel did. And he was at the same time that Jake Delhomme was doing his thing in Acadiana, and Peyton Manning was doing his thing down in New Orleans at Isidore Newman. That's a pretty good trifecta of quarterbacks. And he was so good in baseball that the money that baseball offered was too good to pass up. So he had the best of both worlds. He came in to LSU as a quarterback as a millionaire. And so that's kind of tough for teammates to grab a hold of and to try to relate to. He was older than them, driving a fancy car, going out and eating good meals, and it was a trying, difficult time. And he had some success, he had some failures, but all in all, he was a good guy, and he really loved LSU, he loved Skip Bertman, but the money was too good. So I'm curious to talk to Josh Booty and share his thoughts on how it all transpired, what went into the decision. Why did he come back, and how did the conversation go with LSU? How did that all happen? I think it'll be very, very interesting. And Andrew Lopez will join us as well, and we will talk some Pelicans from the Vegas Summer League. Yes, indeed. This hour of the program brought to you by ShopRite Tobacco Plus Discount Outlets. There's over 60 of them in southern and central Louisiana. They're open all the time. You want breakfast, they've got it. You want lunch, they've got it. You want some dinner samples, they've got it. All fresh, all made to order, all ready to go, and everything under the sun that you could ever imagine. ShopRite Tobacco Plus. Man, if you can't shop right at ShopRite, you really can't shop right at all. You just can't. So 1 hour down. Really enjoyed talking with Matt Wyatt. We got a busy second hour, and it always begins with Hot Topics. CD joins me after this timeout. Hour number two, the Jordy Helfer Show, 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com.